Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. As you may have heard, President Trump made a statement to the nation this morning after Iran last night fired missiles at American military bases in Iraq. He announced new sanctions against Iran and said that as long as he's president, the country will never have a nuclear weapon. No lives were lost in last night's attacks, and he said Iran appears to be standing down. Now, if both Iranians and the U.S. government have engaged in a war of words, none more prompted more immediate sort of emotional outcry than President Trump's threat to hit Iranian cultural sites. In theory, according to his tweets, what the POTUS said should happen next is the U.S. would target 52 sites, including some that were, in his words, important to the Iranian culture. To target cultural sites without a clear military justification is a violation of international law. Yesterday, after his defense secretary and secretary of state contradicted him, Mr. Trump backed down, saying that he believed in following the law. But as regular listeners know, all of it is a show about culture and our culture. We wanted to get a better understanding of the issue of protecting cultural sites. Joining me now is law professor Patty Gerstenblith of DePaul University in Chicago. She is also director of its Center for Art, Museum, and Cultural Heritage Law. Professor, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
In a letter you co-authored to the New York Times, you said that targeting cultural sites would be a war crime. Why?
Well, that's correct, but I do want to add on that targeting cultural sites without military necessity, imperative military necessity, is a war crime. So the international community recognizes that there are circumstances in which, for example, a military base or a cultural site might be used for a military purpose, in which case it is permissible to target that cultural site. But the cultural sites are important to both the people who live in the community where the site is located, but also on a global scale, because this is part of the heritage of all of us. It gives us our identity. It tells us who we were in the past and, in fact, who we are in the present. And it's a legacy that we want to be able to pass on to future generations for them to enjoy, learn from, and benefit from. So it has become an internationally recognized responsibility for over 100 years. And in fact, a responsibility that the United States took on as long ago as the Civil War, when President Abraham Lincoln asked for a military codification of the laws of warfare. And that codification, known as the Libra Code, includes protections for both the collections of museums and libraries, but also the protection of the sites and the structures where cultural heritage is located. So this is a responsibility we have taken on. We've been a leader for internationally through all of the international conventions, the law of war, the law of armed conflict as it developed over more than 100 years. And we have taken that responsibility on. We have shown leadership in the past. We've not always been perfect about it, but I don't believe that the United States has willfully engaged in the intentional targeting of cultural sites in the absence of military necessity. And it would have been a great shame to us as a nation if, in fact, that President Trump had given the order for such destruction and if it had been carried out.
When were the first laws actually written?
Well, as I said, the Libra Code was written in 1863 with the first codified rules for armed conflict. But the first international conventions were written in 1899 and 1907, what are called the Early Hague Conventions, to which the United States was and still is a state party and is recognized as what's called international customary law. Which means that this is a law that every country needs to abide by. So those rules pertain regardless of whether a country has ratified those conventions or not. Of course, during the Second World War, Hitler's Germany violated those principles massively, both in the looting and destruction of movable heritage, you know, things like artworks, religious manuscripts, religious and other sacred implements, but also through intentionally destroying structures and sites such as the old city of Warsaw, which the Germans just came in and massively, you know, destroyed without, again, any excuse of military justification. Following the Second World War, the international community drafted both the 1949 Geneva Conventions and, more specifically, in 1954, the Hague Convention on the Protection of Cultural Property in the Event of Armed Conflict. So that is really what today is considered the primary international legal instrument that applies. And the United States ratified it in 2009, although we have viewed parts of it as part of customary international law even before we ratified the convention.
My guest is Professor Patty Gersten-Blith, law professor at DePaul University. What are some more recent examples of cultural sites being targeted?
Well, more recent examples, I would say, started in the past 20 years, roughly in 2001 with the Taliban destruction of the Bamiyan Buddhas in Afghanistan, which were sculptures that had been sculpted into the side of the mountain from probably about the 5th, 6th centuries A.D., and they simply went and blew it up. They placed explosives around the statues, the sculptures, and they blew them up. Again, in the absence of any specific military conflict or justification. More recently, still, we've seen the Islamic State in Syria and northern Iraq. They destroyed parts of the ancient Roman city of Palmyra in Syria. They destroyed parts of the Neo-Assyrian, so this is roughly 1000 BC, site at Nineveh. They destroyed objects that were in the Mosul Museum in northern Iraq. And they also intentionally destroyed a shrine that was sacred in Islam, Christianity, and Judaism, which was the shrine of the tomb of the prophet Jonah in Nineveh, in modern Mosul. And all of these are examples, again, without military justification. Certainly the actions of the Islamic State and of the Taliban were universally condemned by every country in the world, including and maybe particularly the United States. So it is really hypocritical and shameful if the United States were to undertake this type of action. Still more recently, or about the same time, was the destruction of mausolea and a mosque in Timbuktu in Mali by an Al-Qaeda affiliate. And that individual who was most responsible was recently prosecuted, and he pled guilty eventually to the charges against him by the International Criminal Court at The Hague. So that's an example of somebody being punished for that action. We also have the example in the Balkans in the 1990s of shelling of the World Heritage Site of Dubrovnik by Serbian naval forces, as well as the destruction of the Ottoman period bridge at Mostar and the burning of the Sarajevo Library. So these are all recent examples that are tragic. And I will say we should also keep in mind the idea of the civilian populations that often live near these sites, that are part of the sites, that's part of their living heritage as well, and that the targeting of a cultural site can often result in death to non-combatant civilians, which is itself also a separate war crime. So we don't want to lose sight of the danger that is posed to civilian life while we're talking about cultural sites.
And Professor, this is a bit of a dark question, but as you mentioned at the top, that part of this as a tool of war is to erase a heritage or an identity, to diminish a people. When in history has this been effective? When has this been used effectively as a tool? Is there a particular example?
Well, we certainly have examples of cultural cleansing that have happened and ethnic cleansing. So in the Balkans, that was certainly the case, where the attempt was made in what had been a multi-ethnic, multi-religious society to eradicate the evidence of minority religions within a larger population. Whether it was successful is perhaps a bit of a different question, but it certainly resulted in a separation of the three different ethnic and religious, or four religious ethnic groups within the former Yugoslavia as it broke apart into the different states. And when there were prosecutions also of military leaders, from the Balkan conflict. The concept of ethnic cleansing, while not itself a separate war crime, I have to emphasize, did play a role. The concept of ethnic cleansing played a role in the determination that in the destruction of religious sites, such as mosques, churches, churches of different faiths, were this was viewed as part of the war crime that was carried out in those cases. We also have examples, I will say, if we go back to the Second World War, certainly Hitler attempted, through the destruction of cultural heritage, particularly of the Jewish populations, it was also an attempt to destroy their memory. It was not enough to destroy people, but if you want to eradicate completely the memory of those people, then you also have to destroy the culture and the tangible remains of their culture. And this is also what the Islamic State attempted to do by destroying the tomb of Jonah, as I mentioned. They wanted to eradicate the memory of a multi-ethnic, multi-religious society that had existed in Iraq.
My guest has been Professor Patty Gersten-Blith, law professor at DePaul University. Professor, thank you so much for walking us through this subject.
Thank you for your interest.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Stay with us at the top of the hour. We're going to have a discussion of the play that has rocked Broadway in the past few months. We're talking Slave Play at the top of the hour. This is All of It.